A Song for Midwinter by Anxious Goat. Neville casts an eye over the kitchen to make sure everything's doing what it should be. Crockery and pans piled in the sink, gently scrubbing themselves in hot, soapy water. Tea towels waggling in midair, waiting for things to finish washing. Cloths whisking over every horizontal surface. A mop dancing across the floor. Christmas dinner was excellent, but so extremely bountiful that they've all agreed the pudding will have to wait a couple of hours. Anyway, it'll be better if it's a bit dark, Ginny had pointed out. No point in setting something on fire if you can't see it burning. This is clearly just good sense, so the Christmas pudding is steaming merrily on the stove and smelling incredible. Neville, who was unanimously placed in charge of the cleanup crew, gazes around the kitchen one last time, but everything looks good. He's glad they have magic. According to Hermione, muggles have to do all their cleaning up by hand, which sounds like an actual nightmare. With a satisfied nod, he closes the kitchen door behind him and pads into the living room, where there's a log fire roaring, and the lights have been turned down low, so that the glow of the fire and the twinkle of the Christmas tree and strings of festive lights around the coving make up most of the light. It's very warm and cozy, but Neville's used to working in the open air, come rain or shine, and is starting to feel the need to stretch his legs. "Anyone want to come for a walk with me?" he asks the room at large. "Absolutely not," Blaise says, looking horrified. "Have you seen it out there? It's positively Arctic!" They shudder theatrically. Ginny snorts and puts up her hand. "I'd love—" "No, you wouldn't," Pansy says, extremely firmly. "Yes, I—" "No, no," Luna says, more quietly than Pansy, but no less firmly. "You're coming to our bedroom, and we're going to have lots and lots of sex." She smiles around at everyone. "We've got some lovely new toys."
"Oh," Ginny says, going bright red. "Well, yes. Okie dokie. Good stuff. Sorry, Nev. Another time."
"No worries," Neville says, trying not to laugh as she gives him awkward finger guns and trots after Pansy and Luna. "Anyone else? For a walk, I mean, not sex."
But they all refuse. Lavender and Parvati are already half asleep, tangled up on a sofa together. Harry and Ron have started a half-hearted game of chess, with Hermione's feet on Ron's lap and her head on Harry's, the book she's holding above her eyes partially blocking Harry's view of the chessboard. Not that he'd dream of complaining. Percy is sitting in an armchair, pretending to read, but actually watching Blaise with a sort of intense fascination that Neville doesn't feel comfortable looking at for more than about 3 seconds at a time, while Blaise is lying on their stomach in front of the fire, ankles crossed in the air, painting intricate patterns onto their fingernails. Every now and again, glancing up through their eyelashes and catching Percy's eye, who immediately blushes and stares down at his book, at least until his eyes inevitably drift back to Blaise, and the whole cycle starts over. Millie, who's leaning against the window and talking quietly into her mobile phone, lowers it for a moment to say, "I think Draco already went out for a walk. Maybe you'll run into him?" "Thanks," Neville says, and giving up on the rest of them, goes to put on his stout winter boots and coat. It's good to get out into the fresh air for a bit, even if it is absolutely brass monkeys out here. The cabin is flanked by woods at the front, but Neville leaves by the back door, meaning to take a pleasant stroll around the tarn. He's not sure whether he hopes to meet Draco or not. Things have changed a lot since they were at school. A lot, a lot. Draco somehow turned himself into an actual good person, and he's nice to be around now, with a sarcastic wit and a sharp intelligence that Neville can't help but enjoy. Neville's been supplying him with several particularly finicky plants for his potions, and they've ended up working closely together. And, well, Neville thinks Draco might have been flirting with him for a while now. He's not sure, and Neville has never managed to successfully flirt in his life, so he mostly blushes and loses track of his sentences a lot around Draco, which makes being in his company nice, but incredibly embarrassing.
If he'd known Draco was coming beforehand, he might have seriously considered refusing Ginny's invitation. A week with him around, not to mention the soft glow and sentimentality of Christmas, seems like a recipe for mortification. But when he looks around on coming out of the cabin, he doesn't see anyone. So he pushes his hands into his pockets for warmth and sets out. He reckons it'll take an hour or so to circumambulate the tarn, which will be just right. It's a gorgeous Christmas day. Bitingly cold, but the sun, now very low in the sky, is bright, making the snow glisten and glow as his feet crunch through it. He's walking into the sun, although he only has to squint a little to be able to see. Still, perhaps that's why it takes him a little while to notice the person skating on the tarn. They're a little more than a dot at first, barely visible against the sun, even as dim as it is. But as Neville walks on, they become clearer, and he realizes that they're skimming across the ice in his direction, still distant, but coming ever closer. About halfway across the tarn, they go into a spin, twirling for so long that Neville wonders if they're doing magic or if you can just do that on ice. And then, apparently seamlessly, they're skating again, flying across the ice like a bird, growing bigger and bigger as they come closer. It's not until they're practically human-sized that Neville's heart suddenly begins to race, because this person, who is unrecognizable under coat, scarf, and hat, isn't just skating. They're singing. He has no idea how you skate and sing at the same fucking time. Skating seems like the sort of thing that takes a lot of breath, and so does singing. He's never tried either. Well, that's not quite true. He has sung before when he was very small, but there's nothing like killing an entire flock of sparrows to scare you off that sort of thing. He still dreams about them sometimes, the tiny brown bodies falling to the ground around him, the song dying on his lips as he knelt down, sick with horror. That was the last time he sang. Sometimes he wonders whether his parents knew what they were letting him in for. A witch and a banshee having a child together is unprecedented as far as he knows. They couldn't have known, surely, that their offspring wouldn't be able to sing a note without killing every living creature within earshot. Gran always told him they didn't know, and that they loved him anyway. Still, he can't help but wonder. This, of course, is the other reason Neville might have said no to Ginny's invitation to spend Christmas up at the cabin. You can't have Christmas without singing, and Neville always wants to. So much. He's not sure if that's a half-banshee thing or just a wanting-things-you-can't-have thing, but whenever he's around people singing, he wants it so badly. Over the years, his idea of the experience of singing has taken on a shining, almost mythical quality in his mind, as though it would be the most perfect thing in the world, a sort of pinnacle of human existence. That's what this person's voice sounds like, a pinnacle. High and sweet and rich, like gold made liquid. Neville presses his lips together, even as everything inside him urges him to lift his own voice and join in. "I can't, I can't, I can't," he chants in his mind. "I'll kill whoever that is. I'll kill the birds in the air and the creatures in the woods. I'll..." He'd do anything to sing right now. He'd plunge into the coldest, blackest depths of the tarn. He'd kill. Neville opens his mouth and harmonizes perfectly. The figure on the ice wobbles suddenly, and for one horrible moment, Neville thinks he's killed them. Killed him, because now he can see, and he doesn't know how he didn't notice it before, that the skater is Draco Malfoy. His gray eyes, fixed on Neville's as he rights himself and skims across the ice towards him, are very wide, and their voices mingle to create a sound that is everything Neville has always dreamed singing could be. And Draco isn't dead. He comes to a halt at the edge of the tarn a couple of yards from Neville, and Neville hurries forward to meet him, hands outstretched to meet Draco's, which are reaching out for him. His fingers are just wrapping around Draco's when a shadow flits over them, and Neville glances up. It's a bird. Not a sparrow tumbling helpless from the sky, but a biggish bird, moving its wings lazily, drifting over their heads, then flapping a little harder and wheeling up towards the clouds, letting out one long, lonely cry as it does so. It's not fucking dead. Neville stops singing, and Draco does too, and for a moment they both stare at each other.
How are you not dead? Draco demands shrilly.
How? Wait, what? Neville says.
What do you mean? How am I not dead? How are you not dead?
Draco's eyebrows wrinkle.
Why would I be dead?
Because! Neville lets go of Draco's hands in favor of waving his own around a bit wildly.
That's what happens when I sing, Draco. People die. Animals die. Fucking insects die.
And now, somehow, you don't die?
And that bird didn't die. And how? Draco, how did you not die?
Draco stares at him for a very long moment, and then says, quite flatly,
I need to take my skates off, Neville. Wait a moment.
And he sits down, plump, in the snow, and starts to pull at his laces. Neville, still feeling somewhat hysterical, turns away and scrubs his hand over his face. This is too much. It's just fucking too much. The bird is still wheeling in the sky, now far overhead. At least Neville thinks it's the same bird. He doesn't know anything about birds. It could be literally any bird. The point is that the bird is alive. The bird is alive, and so is Draco, and so is Neville, which is apparently also a surprise. This is not the Christmas Neville was anticipating.
All right, I'm ready to talk, Draco announces, getting up and slinging his skates over his shoulder. Are you serious? Things die when you sing?
Yeah, Neville says. I haven't sung a single note since I was 5. One of my parents was a banshee, and my mom fell in love with them. I don't think they realized what would happen, and then... He shrugs. Well, you know what happened to them.
Yes. Draco reaches out to squeeze Neville's hand again. I had no idea, Neville. I'm sorry.
Neville blushes.
I mean, it's fine, he says quickly. I'm used to it. I just... don't understand why it didn't happen when... When we sang together, Draco says. Yes, it is rather peculiar. I didn't notice you at first, or I'd have stopped.
He hesitates, so Neville gives him a little nudge with his shoulder.
Go on, I told you mine. Why can't you sing? I can sing, Draco says pedantically. It's just that when I do... People have a tendency to fling themselves into the nearest body of water and drown.
Oh, Neville digests this.
How come? Grandmother Malfoy was a siren. I've never been able to sing without... Well, for example, when I was 6, my old nanny was giving me a bath and I started singing. Because I was having fun and, although I knew it was forbidden, I wanted to sing anyway... She hit her head on the tap when she jumped in, and she had almost drowned by the time Mother heard me screaming, and saved her.
He shivers, and Neville gazes at him, appalled. Sparrows are one thing, that was bad enough, but to almost lose... Merlin's ballsack, he mutters. Draco gives a little snort of laughter, then puts his hand over his mouth. And then they're both laughing, giggling like schoolchildren. Not because it's funny, but because, well... What else are they supposed to do?
Merlin, Draco says when he has his breath again. This is so unexpected. We can sing safely if we sing together. That's what's happening here, yes?
I think so, Neville says. We cancel each other out or something.
And we sound amazing together, Draco adds.
He heaves a little sigh. And for a moment there's silence between them. Neville doesn't speak or move, for fear of calling attention to the fact that Draco's slender, chilly fingers are still nestled snugly in his. Then Draco clears his throat and says,
Can I kiss you?
What? Neville squawks, leaping away from him in shock.
Draco twitches an eyebrow upwards. Really, Neville, this cannot be coming as a surprise to you. We've been flirting for months.
Oh, Neville gulps. Have we? I mean, yes. Yes, we have. And also yes. To the kissing, I mean, not...
Which is the point at which Draco, mercifully, shuts him up by kissing him. They don't walk around the tarn, but it's still nearly an hour before they return to the cabin, and Draco barely lets go of Neville's hand all evening. This means that Neville has to eat his Christmas pudding left-handed, which is clumsy and rather messy, but more than made up for by Draco's little giggles each time he hits the side of his mouth with his spoon. And after pudding, there's singing. It's ridiculous and cheesy and maybe the best thing that's ever happened to Neville. They gather around the piano in the corner by the Christmas tree, and Pansy plays Christmas carol after Christmas carol. Draco's hand grips Neville's tightly as their voices mingle with their friends on In the Bleak Midwinter. It's not bleak at all, though. It's perfect.